CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday morning. We are past the middle of July. Well, almost. I mean, today's the 14th. It'll be the middle of July tomorrow, and then before you know it, you blink your eyes, it's done. I mean, August around the corner. Who would have guessed? It's insane. I know when people get annoyed when I say that, but I mean, there's real time, which obviously you can account for in seconds, minutes, and hours, and then there's the feeling of time, which is a whole lot more complicated. Either way, I hope your day's off to an awesome start today. Sure, had a busy week this week. Been into the office every day except Monday. I'm going in today, going in tomorrow, which I know is normal for a lot of us again, but it's feels weird. And driving to meetings and things. I was in a meeting yesterday where there must have been 25 people. We went to Ogilvy in Johannesburg, which is just terrific. And it's so nice to see people. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, right? But it hasn't, like, I haven't had a slew of meetings like that for a while. So it felt a bit odd to kind of stand in a room. We did a little presentation, and Greg and Barrett and Mash were there. And it was just nice to be around people. Like, I know that these are the things that used to drive me crazy. Like, meetings were always, oh, do we have to do this? Can't we just, you know. Can't we just speak to them on the phone or send them a text or whatever? But it's good to see people. It's good to connect that way. And I think there's a need in all of us to do that, which we've been missing out on. Anyway, we've got Pumi joining us in a little while. Pumi Mashiko, who's regularly here on a Thursday. And we've got the Burning Platform coming up. I think there are going to be lots of people who are very excited about today's Burning Platform. Two really cool guests joining Pumi and I. The first, a returning champion who everybody loves, Canthan Pillay, who has been missing, notoriously absent from the Burning Platform for some time, but I am pleased to report he will be back this morning. He has a rare break in his schedule of being a dad and doing all the dad stuff that takes up most mornings for him. My brother's the same. He has to drop the kids, and then my sister-in-law fetches them. I think that's the way it works in a lot of households at the moment. Shared responsibility for ferrying the children around. But Canthan will be with us. And this morning, I'm pleased to say, Ian Cameron, who is the star of that YouTube clip that was doing the rounds last week. In fact, we spent much of Thursday's show last week talking about Ian Cameron, and Dorry's managed to track him down with Simpiwe. They found the guy. He is going to join us this morning. He's the man who stood up to Becky Cele just last week, which is really, really cool. Good to hear from a South African who's, I mean, you know, we're so desperate for leadership in this country that as soon as people saw someone standing up to Becky Cele, they were like, oh, we need to make this guy president, which, I mean, we don't know the first thing about him except that he stands up to an asshole like Becky Cele, and we're like, oh, we got to have him for prez. I don't know about that. I think that's maybe a bit of a knee-jerk reaction from South Africans who feel rudderless and leaderless at the moment. But we'll see what he has to say for himself. And whether or not he has any designs on the world of politics, he certainly is a community policing guy. And he's got an interesting background too. So we'll find out. We'll talk to him a little bit, see what he's all about. And speaking of people who are coming up, I'm also pleased to say that I spent... it was probably... And maybe 45 minutes, maybe an hour. That's all we could squeeze in with a brilliant man called Dr. Alan Mendoza. He's the head and the founder of a think tank in London called the Henry Jackson Society. He explains where the Henry Jackson Society gets its name. He also talks a little bit about what they do. But we mostly spent that 45 minutes to an hour talking about all kinds of politics and global issues and current affairs and stuff that we think might be interesting to you. So we touch on Russia and the Ukraine. We touch on American politics. We touch obviously on the issue of Boris Johnson, because when I recorded this, which was on Thursday last week, it was all happening at that moment. Boris hadn't yet resigned. He hadn't made the announcement. So this was all going on at the moment that we were talking. So Alan Mendoza. That'll come up at about 8 o'clock this morning. You can just refresh your feed and you will find it right there and then. And I'm looking at doing a whole slew of really interesting interviews in the next while. I think it might be time to just change things up a little. So we'll let you know how that's going too, just in terms of the show, so we can start doing things a little bit differently. Now, we've also got Buck Abantu, who will be joining us in a little while. He, unfortunately, is in load shedding, and I have a sneaky suspicion Pumi is too, but we'll find out now. We're going to connect to her in the studio. My power's just gone off, Pum, so have you got power now? You've got power now?
I've got power here at the studio.
Oh, shame, Pum.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you had to rush in.
It's in the dark, guys. It's quite hectic.
So do you even know when yours went off? It must be around 4 a.m. or something.
4 a.m., oh. Yes. It went off around 4 a.m. And here we are.
No, well, thank you for coming in. I know what a ball ache it can be to have. I mean, mine's just gone off. So it looks like we're at opposite ends of the load shedding shit stream for this week. And the same thing happened yesterday.
So this week we're in a bad one, right? Because it goes off at night, and so I went to bed in the dark, me and Heidi. Did you see Heidi on Twitter yesterday talking about going to bed in the dark and waking up in the dark? And then Derek Hanekom,
yes,
tweeting her.
No, what was that all about? Hanekom, no, tell tweeting, me.
Oh, my gosh. Derek Hanekom tweeted her something.
Is this Heidi
is that
from?
How you say her surname?
Yeah, she's the ENCA journalist, right? Heidi Giacos, yeah.
Yes, Giacos. She is the ENCA, mm-hmm. And then Derek Hanekom, all uppity,
yeah,
tweets her back. The government, because the government doesn't care. Me.
Oh, well, they don't.
And
Derek Hanekom.
Kaya Sitole.
Yeah, what did Kaya say to him? I hope you get
who
him
we've
now.
Had on the show before. Who we've had on the show before tweeted a smackdown that says, oh, you know, Derek, you're so right. Heidi's assertion that the government thinks is wildly off the mark.
Nice. All right, we've got to get Kaya back on. You just made me think how much I miss him. All right, so Pums, we've got a couple of things on your agenda.
He's gallivanting all over the world, guy.
He's gallivanting all
over the world because he's relocated to the UK, which we hate, but are happy for him. But also that means he gets to do the things he loves doing, like being at Wimbledon.
And because of the time difference, that will mean he's probably still available to talk to us every now and then. So we'll chase him down. I'm sure he can make time.
Yeah.
All right, here's from the wonderful world of the Eastern Cape. Here is Baka Bantuka. Hello, sir. How are you? Baka Bantu?
I don't know what you mean by wonderful.
What, you mean Makanda hasn't improved overnight? You guys didn't elect a new mayor, now everything's fine?
Oh, Gareth, I wish we improved. I wish we could find the fortitude to improve, guys. The Eastern Cape is continuing to be trash. I am continuing to see flames.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively. They were stoning people in, like, because there's no water in Nelson Mandela Bay.
Yeah.
So, like, the news was just on about, like, there were residents were stoning cars on the highway in Port Elizabeth. I'm like, what are random cars have to do with you guys not having water? But hey, that's how we deal with problems in South Africa.
Well, it's amazing. That's such an infantile response. It's like tantruming, right? It's like, oh, I don't have water, electricity, and throw rocks at random people as they go past. It really shows you the kind of level that some people are at in terms of how much frustration there is. I do think it's interesting to note that the mayor of PE was out in traffic yesterday. They made a big story of this on the TV news. They're like, the mayor of PE, I saw a clip on, I think it was an Instagram. She was out on the streets and she was like trying to get people in cars. It was called water awareness. She's trying to get people to use less water. And I didn't know that the mayor of PE was even a she, but no, most people were just ignoring her. They didn't know who she was and they were driving past her. Like, I'm talking taxis, Buckies, cars, vans, they were all just driving past. And then she was wearing this stupid like a sandwich board thing saying water awareness. You should use less than, I don't know, 10.
She was wearing the sandwich board and not the mayoral bling.
No, the sandwich board. But I mean,
she's not wearing the high visibility jacket.
Oh no, she had a high visibility jacket on. You know, it's almost like every politician gets one of those now, just in case they find themselves in a tough situation, which increasingly they will do. But it was funny to watch because they were trying to obviously get footage of her talking to people, but most people wouldn't even wind down their window.
Listen, the things we see on TV. The things we see on TV. I saw last night, I got to watch a little bit of Summer of Soul. Y'all heard about that?
No.
It is.
No, we haven't. I'm not.
Oh.
What is it?
Summer of Soul is a documentary. Is a documentary about a cultural, about the Harlem Cultural Festival, which was held in the summer of 1969, it's a documentary that was produced by Questlove from The Roots.
Mm-hmm.
He found this footage. So it was like a 6-week festival every weekend, every Saturday, I think they had huge concerts in Harlem in the same summer that, as we all know, on the other side of the world was, now I've forgotten, the rock festival that everybody knows about from 1969.
Oh, Woodstock.
QU. Woodstock, right?
They shot this
festival. There were 300,000 people that came to the festival over those 6 weekends, and it was filmed, and the footage sat in a basement for 50 years.
Oh wow!
That's where Questlove found it.
Oh, that must be
footage
very
is magnificent.
Exciting. So who did
the
they?
The footage is magnificent. Magnificent.
Who did they have performing that we would have known?
Stevie Wonder playing drums.
Mm.
That's what I saw
Stevie
yesterday.
Wonder playing drums.
Oh,
what?
Man.
I've seen him play the piano. Mm-hmm. I've seen him play the harmonica. But did you know that Stevie Wonder could play the drums?
Oh, I love that. I got to see that.
I didn't know. Stevie Wonder is a talent, guys.
Everybody was at this festival. Everybody was at this festival, and they had, everyone, every black artist you can think of came to play. I saw B.B. King.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a performance by B.B. King yesterday.
Wow.
He is very slender in that video in 1969.
By the way, this stuff, I wonder how much other stuff they will discover in the future that's just been locked in. I love the idea that this stuff was hidden away in a storeroom or a basement, and then someone had the initiative to go looking for it and dig it out. Thank God, right? I mean, isn't that awesome?
So what's really funny about it is Questlove talks about, because Quest's dad was in a band. That's how Quest got into music. His dad was in a band, in a touring band. And mm-hmm. so Quest was always around musicians and music and performers. And he says he talked about this festival and nobody seemed to know about it. People couldn't, he's like, I've seen it. I've seen footage. It was on TV. And everybody was just like, yeah, I don't know. I think you made this shit up, yo. And that's how he went looking for the footage. And
damn.
Found it.
I think that's so cool and so exciting. Mm.
It is really, it's incredible footage.
All right, so what is it called?
So
we can all watch it.
20 minutes of the documentary. Summer of Soul.
Summer of Soul. Got it. Made a note. Love that. So Pums, apparently,
it's a Hulu documentary.
Oh, so it's on Hulu. Okay, I thought it was Netflix. So I have to. You know, you have to have all these services, or else you have to be willing to pirate the stuff. That's the two options. And I think you can work out which one I'm going to do. I don't have no Hulu subscription, everybody. So that's going to be fun. Don't tell them. All right, that's all that matters.
You could be someone's tenant. You could be someone's Hulu tenant.
Mm. Hey. Speaking of tenants, I need to ask you about this. So I have this flat in Sandton, which I've been renting out. And the tenant's great. And I she pays on time and everything's good. But then I was going through the accounts on Tuesday. And I realized that there are 2 months that were outstanding somewhere in the middle of last year. And there are about 8 electricity bills that she hasn't paid that I've kind of, because it's a debit order off my account. So I've subsidized her electricity for a couple of months now. So I'm asking myself how I should approach this. Do I just send her an email? Should I be worried about this? Should I be prepared for some kind of a pushback from her? What is the situation there? Do you just say, hey, listen, I was going through the accounts and these months are outstanding? Because so far, she's been very good about things like that when there has been an error or she's forgotten a month or whatever. And I'm kind of forgiving. I'm not one of those nasty people who's like, oh, well, I'm going to throw you out in your ass. I always go, oh, well, can we sort this out? And she's been very good about it. What do you think I should do?
Ring, ring.
Ready, fine.
It's Gareth. Yeah.
Not email?
Don't be awkward about it. Don't be awkward about it. Just phone her up. And say, and then you can follow up with an email.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, if I'm bad and I pirate this Hulu documentary, then do I really have any right to point fingers at my tenant? When you said I'm not a Hulu tenant, I was like, oh God, my tenant. I just a bit of hypocrisy coming in here. So like, I should pay if I expect other people to pay. So I don't know. Dogoza says email and then call to discuss. Okay, well, that's, yeah, I mean, Pumi's right. Obviously, you're right. I don't know. Matthew says, haha, my tenant
didn't pay for a year.
Didn't pay for a year, and I have a 14K bill and just left the place. Was tempted to sell his furniture. Well, I mean, you know.
What do you mean just left the place?
The tenants obviously
what
just left.
What does that
it.
Mean?
The tenants obviously just moved out.
Yeah, but what does that mean? Without their furniture. What if something happened to the tenant? What if they were hurt?
What if they're dead? They died in a ditch.
What if they died of COVID?
Yeah.
On their way.
So Steve says, many a Pornhub movie has this exact same storyline. you see, Mariska is the kind of person who, she says you need to go the proper legal route right from the start. I don't know about that.
Hey, well, yeah. Mariska, that escalated very quickly.
David Sachs says, phone call first, otherwise you'll send an email and you can't get hold of them to explain it. Otherwise, just email. Well, okay, email or call. I'm going to try them. I'll try the email first. If that doesn't work, then I'll call. But I'm pretty sure, like, we can figure this out. You know, people need a place to live. People need to know what's going on. They need to know what the rules are. So I'm going to just a gentle reminder is where I'll start, and then we'll see how we go.
You need to kick her out, and there's a young man from the Eastern Cape who's looking for a place in Sandton to stay in.
All right.
Kick her out.
Have you got some money to pay the
kick
rent?
Kick her out.
Because I'll give you that place for the you got some money for rent? It's not hugely it's not hugely expensive.
Well, it seems like no one pays at this place.
Oh, so you just want it because it's for free.
People didn't pay at this place. You're subsidizing electricity.
You want me to pay your electricity and give you free rent. Oh, okay. No, Bakavantu. I think I'm better off with my current tenant. Thank you. Unbelievable. Oh, man. And people do ignore email. That's a good point John makes. But I have found she's pretty good about this. She actually works in an auditing firm. And she's a very fastidious person. But obviously not as fastidious as I would think.
As auditors are wont to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly, you know, I don't know if I want her as my auditor because she kind of forgets electricity bills, which is kind of important, especially when all that is on our mind at the moment is electricity. But we'll see. I just don't want to be a landlord anymore. Frankly, I'd rather sell this place. I mean, who wants to be a landlord? You know,
you've had it for a long time.
I know, Pums. I lived in it for, 4 or 5 years? And then I built and bought this place. And I just, you know, everybody said in those days, oh, buy a property. It's a great investment. I just don't like the idea that if anything goes wrong, the oven breaks or the geyser bursts or something, then I have to sort that out. And I don't feel like I'm charging enough rent because I don't feel that there's that much wiggle room in the market at the moment to charge that much rent. So I feel it's just paying, it's basically covering costs at this stage, you know? So I think it's time to get rid of it. Yeah.
So I think owning property, as I've grown older, I think it was, it's one of those things that, that we've been lied to about.
Yep.
Like owning
totally
property.
Agree.
It's just...
Yeah, I
you know, it's so much, it's so much drama, it's so much work, it's so much like stuff. You've got to, like,
you know, if I could, if I could go back,
you've
got to back about to how old are you now?
25.
All right, so he's 25. So if I could go back to 25, couple of things I'd do. First thing I would do, only buy the property that you live in. And only buy one that you feel you're going to live in for a long time, or that you're going to add value to. You're gonna, you know, you're gonna make alterations. You're gonna do a little maintenance. You might change some things, but only pay for that property and do not buy other property. Number one. Number two, I would say, I would have put away more money, but not into policies, into savings, and then later on investments. Because obviously, 25 years ago, there was a, you know, there was we were headed for sunny days in terms of investments. This is really the first recession in living memory for many people in the world, the first major recession. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people would have thought in those days, oh, you know, it's going to get better and better and better, because it did. It kind of improved year on year on year. And I would not have wasted money on like the dumb stuff. Like I wouldn't have bought so many clothes and things, because I feel those were the biggest pitfalls in my financial past. Speaking to Joe Cimino this week, it just reminded me of, like, we get taken by these insurance companies. You know, you need life cover, you need this kind of cover, you need this policy, retirement, this, I don't know. All of those things I've put money into, you can't touch them until you're very old. And they seem to me to not have been...
And the return's not that great.
It's pathetic. There's no return on them. So
the return's not great.
So we've been lied to about property, Pumi. We've been lied to about these policies. It's bullshit, right?
So
what would you have done if you could do it again?
If I went back, I would travel more. I'd spend all my money traveling. I really would. I would travel more. I would see more of the world. And I would do more of that kind of stuff. I think the education, like the life learning that I got from traveling and being out, I would probably want to work in different places as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. That I like that.
That's definitely wouldn't have saved my money on policies and shit. I'm not even sure if I would have bought a place. I think I would have probably rented a smaller place for longer. Because, you know, you're not living. I don't think that we're that way. So back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, people stayed in one place for a long time.
Right.
But now we travel more. We travel more and move around more often. And I think I wouldn't want to be shackled to that.
And like, unless you are unless you're a crazy spender, like having liquid capital is the best thing to have, right? The hard cash is what you want. So Bakabantu, obviously you're 25. Yeah. You haven't thought about any of this shit, or maybe you're
like if I was 25.
Yeah, exactly. But if you
if I was 25, I'd also do the same.
I mean, do you have a plan for like where you want to put money once you save up some, or whether or not you want to do this, or whether you'd like to buy property, or do you have any kind of strategy? Because I definitely didn't at 25. I wish I had.
I've always seen like owning a house, like you were describing. I don't know, maybe raised old school like that. I've always seen owning a house, step one. Yeah, and then after that was just have roots somewhere and then see the world.
Yeah, Steve E says, being in my house for 23 years, it's nearly paid for. 23 years of making those steps. Yeah. I hear that. I mean, listen.
isn't the standard like 20 years for a bond?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that on the Yeah, wasn't that the advertisement?
If I didn't have, my bond in the first few years of Cliff Central, I wouldn't have been able to buy groceries. I was borrowing against that for at least 2, maybe 3 years of that, of starting the business. So, I mean, I'm still paying it off. I've made very little progress. Very little. In fact, I've gone backwards, you could say, from where I was maybe, you know, 9, 10 years ago. Anyway, I mean, it's we can all look back, if only, right? But sometimes sometimes you only,
you only
get wise, like, later on. So that's part of the whole reason that you are 25, is that you...
Hindsight is 20.
Yes, know. With every passing...
I know.
With every passing birthday. But I see Donna says, y'all are still young enough to do all that, and I agree with you. Now I do. Now I, as much as I can, I will get on a plane and go somewhere.
Yeah, it's never too late.
To see new places.
It's never too late.
Yeah, but it's...
And you
when
see...
When you're older, it's just a little bit more sucky.
You see people in their 60s and 70s, like they're embracing the things that they should have done maybe earlier. But and everything in its time. And you can't regret stuff like that. You can't get upset about things like that. You just got to make your way.
No, so definitely not a regret.
No.
Just what are we doing differently in the next 20 years?
Right. People are saying renovations on rentals are so costly. Be wise and repurpose where you can. Well, I am a big fan. Yeah, I'm a big fan of recycling, repurposing, changing stuff around that you already have instead of buying new stuff. I think that's the way to go. Can we just talk about something? It's already 5:30. We've got to get to some headlines. A couple of things in the headlines that are worth reflection. There's a lot going on. Let's start off with this. Government says they're going to create 2 million jobs before the election.
Gareth, love the figure. Start with who in government?
All right, let me start
with
this.
When was the last time you heard that name, Tulas Ngwesi? When was the last time? Did you even...
The Labour Minister.
Remember that the man is a minister?
Well, he was
did
the guy...
Did you remember that the man
Tulas Ngwesi is the guy who taught us about the fire pool, remember? He's the one. He is now our Labour Minister, and he says government wants to add 2 million jobs before the next election. That's according to Bloomberg News. And we're all painfully aware that South Africa has one of the highest unemployment rates in the world, over 35%. The number rises to over 45% if you include people who've given up on finding work. That means that the government has until 2024 to achieve what would seem like a miraculous feat. Whether or not that's achievable, I don't know. These guys set the trap and then they walk straight into it, right? He goes, whether or not that's possible, I don't know, he said during an interview in Johannesburg. If government does in fact have a strategy to achieve this aim, it appears to involve reducing the number of undocumented immigrants in the country. Oh, that's what they're going to do. Go after the weakest and the people at the bottom of the scale. Yeah, punish them. That's a great way to start. You want jobs? I know what we'll do. We'll chase the Somalians and the Zimbabweans out. We'll force them to leave. That'll suddenly create employment for a whole lot of other people, which it won't. It's unbelievable. There's been a trend of employment of foreign workers at the expense of South African workers, as he told Bloomberg. This is such dangerous rhetoric. This is the kind of shit that you heard the Nazis saying.
Yeah.
Don't you remember the Nazis... World War II, I know it was a long time ago and many people didn't live through it, but have you picked up a single history book where you're othering people? We were talking about this yesterday with Celeste and Thuli. And, you know, the moment we start saying those people over there shouldn't or mustn't or government should or it's their fault, you're going down a dangerous path. Anyway, this is from our Minister of Labor.
Especially if it's government endorsed.
Yes. I mean, but that's what it is.
And it's so you remember when a couple of, it's maybe two and a half months ago, when the whole, Dandalax and Dudula phenomenon was gaining momentum and steam.
Yes.
We got some comments in the gallery here about, because I still believe it's a terribly slippery slope. And when Tlatla started out riling people up about foreign nationals and what they mean and the danger and the township and the.
Yes.
And this past Sunday, after the shooting in the tavern in Orlando East, I've seen some videos of people complaining about, Tsonga speaking people and Venda speaking people.
I saw that as well.
Xhosa speaking people.
Now suddenly we're tribal.
I told y'all, first it starts with the foreigners and then it.
And you know, as a lot smarter people than me have often said, it's fine when the economy is growing and there's opportunity for people and people haven't given up hope. But the moment they're hopeless and they're stoning cars in PE or whatever because they don't have water and electricity and the government is mismanaging things to the point where you can see they've thrown their hands up in the air now. I mean, this whole I was talking to Martin Hood, the gun lawyer. You know, we did that gun cast a couple of years ago to help people who own guns to know what the rules are. And Martin is the foremost gun lawyer in the country. He's the one who took the application to the court to have them declare that and the police eventually admitted they can't do anything anymore. They're admitting the whole situation is beyond their control. So if you own a gun and you've handed it in at the police station and you're expecting your license to be reissued, it's not going to happen. Just take your gun home and keep it at home and your license will take an extra 2-3 years, which means you could be unlicensed should you have to use your gun. And we'll figure that out when we get there is basically the answer. But it just shows you the police have given up there. They've given up with electricity. There's nothing they can do here. We've spoken about André de Ruyter and Eskom until we're blue in the face. But the fact is, they don't know how to get out of this. And here's Tula Sinqesi, who's blaming the foreigners because he's run out of other excuses. Now, I saw in the comments, and I thought this is kind of funny. Pumi, you can back this up if it's true. But someone whose name is Tulas, right, which is shut up or keep quiet, and Nqesi, which is sorry. His name and surname are too much already, says Yonda. Is that right?
Nqesi is the sorry.
Sanele says the CR17 campaign promised 500 jobs for the youth. Can they deliver those first before dreaming about 150% more? I forgot about that, but the CR, do you remember all that euphoria around Cyril, the CR17 campaign? Remember that bullshit?
Yes. Ramaphoria.
Ramaphoria, yes. There are still some people who are doing that, by the way. Still some people in the media who are doing that shit. They love it.
But his fans are jumping ship. Fans are jumping ship. Two weeks in a row now, Peter Bruce has been scathing about young Cyril.
No, the problem is no one's reading Peter Bruce except you. The rest of us. I remember criticizing Peter Bruce for his ramaphoria at the start of lockdown. And I remember he made some snide remark about what does Gareth Cliff know or whatever? And I would like an apology now, I think. I think I'm going to go around asking people. I'm going to go around with a little notepad with all the people who said at the beginning of lockdown, you shut up. What do you know? And I'm going to pass around a couple of notes that are already written out. All they have to do is sign them. Dear Gareth, I'm so sorry. I was wrong and you were right. Here with my apology. And I will run around in a sundress for the rest of this month. And you can spank me with a paddle for being a fucking moron. I'd like, just sign that for me, Peter Bruce. That would be great. Oh, Adrian Basson and all the other people. And the people who called me an anti-vax even though I'd had 2 shots. I'd like to have those people apologize at the same time. So all of you, line up. Let's put you in a little sundress and spank you.
Line them up.
That's right. Sons of bitches.
I saw somebody, one of the ministers, it would also seem that the price for defaming these politicians has gone up. You remember Trevor Manuel set it at 50,000 rand and this Julius had and the EFF had to pay?
Yes.
But I saw somebody being sued for 200,000 rands.
Oh?
For crim injuria. I'm going to look for it just now. Oh, I was just like, Gareth, you could...
I'd like an extra 200,000 rand. Let me look into that, Pumi. That's a good idea. By the way, while we're talking about getting money for nothing, and we've only really done one headline this morning, but Bagabantu, you know how much you've been looking into how much kings, queens, and traditional leaders get paid in South Africa. Listen to this, everybody. You're shitting your pants. What are the numbers?
I wish I was royal, Gareth.
Yeah. And by the way, these are people who were just born into these families.
I wish I was royal.
And these are people
to
who.
Be a king in South Africa.
They're not doing anything at all to improve the country. We're just giving them free money. So who's on this payroll and how much do they get?
Exactly. Because these people aren't even councillors, because they're still councillors, they're still city managers, they're still mayors. We have so many. Mm-hmm. We have so many like people that we employ in this country, and we're just paying these people to just be happy and live their best lives, these
right.
kings and queens.
Yeah.
So to be a king in South Africa or a queen, you get annually 1.2 mil in your bank account.
Ka-ching! That would be nice.
1.2 mil for free. Ka-ching. I saw a video of the Xhosa King dancing on Twitter or something like that, and people were posting it on TikTok and whatnot, saying this guy is so happy. Yeah, I would also be happy getting 1.2 mil a year just for being me.
By the way, let's not forget the last Xhosa King, Dalin Diabo. Do you remember him? He went to jail.
Yeah, this is Dalin.
This is the same one.
He got a pardon from Cyril.
Oh, so it's the same idiot. Because this guy was... He's a moron. Didn't he, he hit a woman, he stole money, he's always high on weed. This is the guy we're paying for? We're paying for this derelict? It's like Hunter Biden.
Yeah, we are paying for this guy to live his best life. This guy ordered killings. That's why he went to prison, because as a king, he mm-hmm. said, let's go kill those people who had stole.
Right.
I think they stole cattle or something.
Yeah, and then he
got put in prison for that, because that's inciting violence.
Yeah.
He's always high.
So, okay, the kings get well over a million. That's nice. An extra million a year would be great, wouldn't it? Just to be called king. Yeah, and you get called king, and people have to bow.
And at the lower end of the spectrum,
yeah,
Gareth.
People get to bow and scrape. This is great. So what about other traditional leaders, like the ones who are lower down the rank? Do they also get some free money?
Yeah, I don't know what a head woman or a head man is, but they also get money. Apparently, we also pay for those. There's a senior traditional leader. There's a full-time member of the PHLT. I don't know what these are, but we are paying for these. And they get 120K a year.
Nice.
That's like, what, 10,000 a month?
It's nice. That's good money. Just for being there.
That's a provincial...
And it's been increasing.
Of traditional leaders.
Right.
How stuff has not been increasing? How only payments have been increasing? Their salaries have also been increasing.
Of course. Yes. That's right. And Dogoza says, isn't that your king, Bakabantu? Yes, exactly. Show some respect, Bakabantu.
No, he is my king. I recognize that man as my king. Also, like, I think I'm directly related to him because, like, when you break up the Xhosa tribe, he's the king of Abatembu.
Yes.
And I'm also Umtembu.
So are the Mandelas.
He's directly my king, and I don't like the man. Yeah, so are the wow. Well, the Mandelas, there's a story there. Apparently, yeah. They stole the crown somewhere. There's a story.
Uh-huh.
There's a shady story. There's always stories around Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
They stole the crown somewhere.
Right. I don't know. So these people are being paid for. There's some more news you didn't necessarily want to hear this morning. But how's this? According to the Sowetan, the Home Affairs Department is granting retirement visas to people who are younger than 25. Yes. If you're a 25-year-old adult looking to retire, then South Africa is the place for you, but only if you're a foreigner. This is one of the anomalies that's been revealed by a task team into the issue of permits regarding foreign nationals since 2004. The task team set up by the department has found that adults as young as 25 were irregularly granted retirement visas to enter the country. Ha! So, according to these people, there is widespread corruption, with the issuing of permits and the names of 12 officials that have been handed over to the Hawks for investigation. And then, of course, when it gets to the NPA, it'll just grind to a halt, as it always does. He said officials in the department were granting these retirement permits to people who were 20, 25 years old. We detected a spike of retirement visas in 2018. They involved Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India, mostly nationals from those countries. 79% of applicants applied for retirement before the age of 55, and 65% of them were approved. Applicants younger than 25 had retired person visas approved, which is rather strange, says the department. You don't say. So basically, you want to come to South Africa, the best way in is to pretend that you're retiring, even though you're 25. How does that grab you? Do you like that story?
So, you know what I know we talk about, like, what used to be mainstream media on the show often and about. You know what really irks me?
What?
About all of these stories. It shows two things, right? It's showing the politicians picking up on this populist rhetoric that's happening out there, right? This anti-foreign national, The politicians are obviously all picking up on it and wanting to score cheap points. And so they're also going after that, right? So now suddenly there's a task team at the Department of Home Affairs that's looking at the corruption and right? Mm-hmm. Why is it a task team? Why is it not police? Why are the police not doing their job? Why are the Hawks not doing their job? These people that are being handed over, you know?
Yeah.
But there's also... In the media too, right, is the way all of this reporting is also because it's the popular topic. Everybody's talking about it. So we feed the fire with air. You know, we feed the fire with air. So now everybody's reporting about it. It's kind of like the tavern killings. I was wondering if the tavern killings that were reported after this weekend would have been reported on had it not been for Enyobeni a week and a half
probably
ago.
Probably not.
Right? Would we be watching what's happening at taverns?
Probably not. Well, I do.
We care.
I think we do care, Bakabantu, but the average person's attention span is so short now that we just don't stay on a story for long enough. You know, again, I'm still upset about things like Marikana and Life Esdemeni. I brought it up the other day. I don't think anybody else really thinks about Life Esdemeni very much anymore. I don't think anything's going to happen. No one's been arrested. No one's been sent to jail. These are things that are now that have been investigated. That actually we forced people to come and account for themselves in front of Judge Dikang Mozeneke. Remember?
And then what?
Zero. Nothing. But I'm excited about one news story.
I actually had an uncle who was directly affected by Life Esdemeni.
Oh, really?
No, really?
It's an interesting story. Yo, to keep it short, this guy was lost in the 80s, presumed dead, buried at home. Everything was done. And then he started speaking just before the Life Esdemeni tragedy, before they started moving the patients. So he started speaking, but like this nurse who has been there for 10 years hasn't heard this man speak. He's always been one of those schizophrenias that was being quiet and whatnot. So now he starts speaking and starts like speaking in coherent sentences, talking about where is his home. And then this lady calls a friend who's a teacher. This teacher randomly tells the story in class. One of the people in class was my cousin listening, goes and randomly tells the story to their mom. And then the mom picks up, oh no, man, these names sound familiar. These are the names of my cousins.
Huh.
And then calls the teacher, gets the nurse to illegally take a picture of this patient because they're not allowed to take pictures of this patient.
Yeah.
Takes it to the guy's mom who was still alive, luckily. And the mom was like, she's like a grandmother now. She was like, that's my son. Let's go pick him up. A week later, they do the whole home affairs thing. They undo his deaths and whatnot. And then I think about a month, he was back home. Just before all of that Life is many stuff happened.
Wait, so there was a symbolic funeral? Did you also have a symbolic funeral?
No, I wasn't there because this happened in the 80s before I was born. But they had a symbolic funeral. So we had a symbolic unfuneral link when we dug up a hole. And we actually found like the, because they didn't put in a box because there was no body. But we buried like this traditional blanket that we bury all our dead in. It's like a white blanket with a black stripe. So like we dug that up and then we left the hole vacant. So he passed away, like this was, like, so he passed away last year, I think. Yeah, he passed away last year. Then we just buried him in his old hole. But the weirdest thing in also his happened. Old hole. So he passed away last year at the beginning. And then, so at the beginning of the year, last year, he passed away. And then December last year, we had a symbolic taking to the mountain because he never went to the mountain because he got lost before he went to the mountain. So we also had a symbolic umgidi, and it was like, it was very like, I was laughing about it, like in the family group. But
sounds kind of
like
ridiculous.
A symbolic thing where we're taking this dead guy. That, we're taking this dead guy to the mountain and bring him back the next day.
Right.
So that we can do his rightful stuff and then he can be accepted in the ancestors. And it was a joke, but that was weird.
Wow, so what a story. So you
were involved. Symbolic. No, but I think that it's important to understand that the symbolic funeral is an Eastern Cape thing then, huh?
Yeah, no, the symbolic funeral is an Eastern Cape thing. If you're lost, I think...
Why would they try to find you. Why is Cyril getting all this backlash for attending a symbolic funeral?
I don't know, but
I'm trying to connect the dots, Bafetsu.
No. Everyone just hates Cyril at the moment.
Yeah. let me just tell you a story that'll make you feel happier. Right. I like this. The South African Revenue Service announced on Tuesday its operations have been affected by industrial action from unions, forcing the tax body to close 18 branches in 7 provinces across the country. It comes at a sensitive time for SARS operations as tax season started at the beginning of July. SARS has floated the idea of channeling its savings from 2021 towards wages. Unions said this would only add up to a 1.39% increase and rejected the offer. But the tax agency says it cannot budget more than 70 million for baseline increases. I want the workers at SARS to be unhappy. I want them to completely fall apart like every other department, and then we can stop paying taxes. I would love this. I mean, we're already, they take our money already and they abuse and misdirect and steal and fraudulently reappropriate stuff that isn't theirs. SARS owes me money. They've owed me money for the last year and a half. I want them to collapse like every other government department. It's only right that they collapse as well. So I think this is a good news story. May SARS start to crumble and fall apart and disintegrate completely. I think this is something worth celebrating. Who else is going to join me as we doi doi in the street to celebrate SARS falling apart? Come on, let's do this.
Stink mean as it A is.
No, he says, thank you. Nobody wants to pay taxes. Yes, exactly. And as G-Star points out, this is Tom Moyane's shit show from all those years ago. SARS has been destroyed by the ANC. Yeah, but it was all part of a plan. You know, they had to capture SARS so they could get their hands on the revenue straight away. It was like fresh from the oven before it even went to finance. Just straight out of there. And Stevie agrees. He says, yes, SARS must be hacked. Oh, it's so great. So there is good news, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hope SARS continue to fall apart. That would be great news. I think everybody's excited about that. Can we just very briefly, because nobody really knew any updates last night about the whole Senzo Miyua trial. I know Advocate Defoe has stepped aside. He doesn't want to represent the accused anymore. Now he's busy.
He wants to represent the accused.
Well, he says
but
he can't.
His life has been threatened.
Yes, and he says Cyril. He says Cyril's part of that, hey?
He didn't say Cyril. Guys.
You said Cyril, Pumi.
Y'all just what? He didn't say Cyril. He said from the office
of the president.
From the number one office. From the number one office. For all we know, it could be Kusela Diko. But
this is why SARS has to fall apart. We have to stop supporting these morons.
She's not there.
We really. No, but we have
to. No, she's not there anymore.
We have to stop paying for this.
She's not there anymore.
I know, shame, because she was also involved.
But it could be
she was involved in so much of the PPE scandal, the tender scandal, that she and her husband have gone to ground.
It could be anyone, including Cyril.
It
could be anyone.
Could be Silili.
It could be anyone.
Including Cyril.
It could be the minister. It could be the minister. It could be Monty. Is it Monty Kukubele? It could be Monty Kukubele. It could be anyone.
Oh, my God. This case, as Jean says, he's turned it into a soap opera. Yeah, but... You know what?
I hate to break it to you. Did not turn it into
South
a soap
Africa
opera.
Is
it was a soap opera at the beginning.
Yes, Pumi, correct. But I hate to break it to everybody. South Africa is a big soap opera. And we're not even well produced. We're like the old generations. Do you remember? That's what we are. And it's like we've got shitty like actors Dallas. And shitty actresses. And it's like people coming back from the dead. And Shamina Batoy, been dead, but she's pretending to be alive.
Gareth, don't talk shit about old generations. Do not talk shit about old generations. That was primetime TV.
Oh, I loved that show. Are you kidding?
Primetime TV with like we've had some stellar actresses and actors.
There you go. Listen. No, you're right. I can't say that I hate the old generations. It was actually one of my favorite things. Yeah. I used to get back from school, and then that would be on. And I would rather than do my homework, I'd just watch this mindless stuff, and it was fun. It was important. All right, so at this rate, the Senzo's family will never get justice. Delays after that. Well, I mean, you may say, Stink Mina, why did it even take this long for it to be investigated? Why has it taken years and years and years for this to even get to court? G-Star says, low, low, low IQ leaders. Gareth, please respect OG generations. When 8 p.m. was 8 p.m. Yeah, that's a good point. And we had electricity at 8
Prime
p.m.
Prime time.
Yeah, we had electricity.
Prime
Those
time.
Are the good old days. Listen, I saw a trade unionist on TV. You must know things are bad. When a trade unionist goes on TV and says, it was better under apartheid. Because, you know, that's like the ultimate insult.
Who's that?
Ibrahim something or another. He's an old Kasatu guy. He was there at the beginning of Kasatu. I used to have him on the ENCA show. He, you know, in this country, when people say that, it's like the worst insult, right? That's the most awful thing you can say, is that it was better under apartheid. It's like, that's like what you say before you leave the house and burn it down. And this guy was saying that because he said, electricity. At least we had electricity. I just thought, oh, my God, dude, you are picking the lowest hanging fruit if you've only figured that out now.
Yeah.
So great.
Speechless.
Oh, well, what are we going to do?
Speechless.
Sanele says, that's some serious sax on the old generation's theme song. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That was a great song.
Yes.
Ethan even says, great song. Getting home to watch TV after school. I've always been jealous of these children. TV's a luxury. Most children see it as a need. Shut up, Ethan. Stop moaning about how poor you were when you were young. We can all do that. It was important to not do homework. If I weren't watching TV, I would have been playing in the garden. So it's not about money. I would have been running around. I would have been doing something else. But I did not like my homework. Yeah. Nice, Gareth. Are you having an espresso? Fancy. No, I'm just having a plain black coffee. But
I'm not having.
Oh, shame, Pums, because there isn't any, hey? There is some. You know where there is some coffee?
I'm just saying.
There's some coffee in the cupboard where Rena sits. Go and help yourself to that, Pums. You have my permission.
There's a stash, people.
But only for special people like you, Pumi. The rest must drink that shit that Jane serves up. Are you gonna be in this morning? Because I'll be there at about 9:15. Yeah. Are you still going to be there?
I would have stayed, but this morning as I left the house, I got an SMS from Young Kanego saying he's really not feeling well.
Oh, shame.
We've been having a WhatsApp back and forth for 2.5 days. He's not feeling well, and I think it's just man flu.
Shame, man.
Well, I think it's little man flu.
You got to look after him.
So now I have to go fetch him and take him to a doctor.
Jean and Gary, but both, you know what? Both are just, they want you to know that there is re-coffee for you there as well, because that's what we keep. We keep
there's the, what?
Re-coffee.
There's what? What?
It's that stuff that, you know, it comes in a big tin, this big.
And what is it? It makes, it just colors your water. It colors your warm water black.
Well, Ben used to call it a cup of brown. Hey, listen, it's already 7 o'clock.
Guys,
we've got to take a break,
y'all,
because
gotta recognize that there's ghetto snob in me, y'all.
I know.
Gotta recognize that's why ghetto snob in me.
That's why people are saying to you here that they think you should try the re-coffee. That's what people are telling you. All right, so coming up, we have got the Burning Platform. We're going to be joined by Canton Pillay, Ian Cameron, Pumi Mashiko. All of that's coming to you in the next hour. Plus, I do have to remind you, Dr. Alan Mendoza, the founder and executive director of the Henry Jackson Society, which is a British-based think tank. He speaks to me. And
Yo. Yay.
He speaks to me at 8 o'clock this morning. Well, we recorded it last Thursday, but that goes live at 8 o'clock this morning. You don't want to miss it. All of that and more on the way. Stick around. The Burning Platform is next. CliffCentral.com